A kingdom cannot fall when its heir still stands.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you all of social media's most popular books and telling you whether you should take the time out of your busy schedule to give them a read. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. And for this week, we are tackling a book that kind of became popular end of last year. It is The Jasad Heir by Sarah Hashem. Sorry, Sarah. Sarah Hashem, I would guess, but I can look that up later, maybe. The Jasad Heir follows, it's a fantasy book. It follows the story of Sylvia, who is the lost heir of Jasad, which was scorched to the ground by the Nishael. Nishael? How do we say these names? Nizal?
I was also saying Nizal, but, you know, could be wrong.
That could be incorrect, yeah.
Here's the summary. It's Egyptian-based.
It is Egyptian-based. It follows a Middle Eastern culture. Pronunciation. Okay, this is saying Neil.
Neil?
Neil.
Neil?
Yeah. Huh.
Oh my God.
It has a Z in it. Cool. I'm never going to say that name again. Basically, her kingdom, Jasad, is scorched to the ground. She escapes, but her entire family dies. And this is when she's very, very young. And she's living on her own.
Is this a spoiler?
No.
Well, the book starts. They know that she's the...
They know she's the Jasad heir.
Just saying.
First 40 pages, I think
it's revealed pretty quickly.
Okay, you've read it most recently, so I'll accept.
Yeah.
No, because yeah, it's revealed very quickly. If it isn't revealed that quickly, I mean, it's obvious. Basically, she is trying to keep her identity a secret. Jasadi people have a little bit of magic. And that is how they get tracked down and hunted, is if they use that magic, they get killed. So she is hiding with cuffs on her wrists that prevent her from using her magic that her grandparents put on, but she also cannot take them off on her own. Basically, the book picks up where she is living in this really small rural town. She's 19 years old, I believe, 20 years old. And she is trying to stay hidden in this world and survive in this world while also dealing with her own personal feelings about how her people are being treated, but also just trying to survive. And that's when kind of shit hits the fan, as it always does, and a hero's journey has to start.
Oh, yeah. So first things first, as always, do you guys have reviews?
I do. I found a 1-star review, which all of the reviews were really long, so I'm only going to read the first part of this one, but I thought this was funny. It's 1-star on Goodreads, and it says, "Who needs reading glasses when you can pick up this book and feel like you're reading through drunk simulation goggles? That's how wonky the world building was."
Damn.
Aggressive. Okay.
Yeah. I have 2, and I want you guys to guess the stars on the first one, because I think it's really funny, because it's a really mean review. I should have DNF'd this. It didn't hold my interest. Trope-laden generic fantasy with a coat of Egyptian paint slapped on it, with bonus genocide. That's a 3-star review.
Okay, that should be 1-star.
I was like, what? And then the second one is more lighthearted, also 3 stars. It's my choice. I'm not a captive. Bestie, what?
I have a 4-star. It says, I was reluctant to read at first. I don't know why, but the premise didn't fully entice me at the time I received it in my Lumicrate box. However, after reading it, I cannot wait for the sequel. There's definitely bits that require more improvement, like pacing, but to be honest, as a debut novel, I think it's brilliant. I feel like it'll be one of those series, when completed, where people will say the first book is a bit slow, and then the next few will be like, bam, 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 action, action, action. But that may just be me.
I believe that.
Yeah, I can see that as well.
It's giving Throne of Glass.
Yes.
I saw a lot of reviews.
It's maybe giving Throne of Glass a little too much.
Yes, that was the one-star reviews that were like, this is a knockoff of Throne of Glass.
All right. Well, the overall Goodreads rating is 3.99 out of 5, so very close to 4 stars. And the overall Amazon rating is 4.3 out of 5. Where did you guys ultimately come down?
I came down at 4 stars. I read this a few months back, so I don't totally know my logic behind that, but I know I devoured the book. So,
yeah.
I also get 4 stars. I see people's criticisms about it not being the most original storyline, but also, like, I eat this storyline up every single time. So, and I liked the politics of it. I know it was politics heavy for some people, but I enjoyed that. 4 stars for me.
Yeah, I'm also 4 stars. I loved the politics in this book. However, and that's, I feel like, really what kept me reading, is I loved watching the characters sort of navigate the political system. I also really liked the characters. However, and like when I finished the book, I wanted to pick up the second book immediately. I was like, oh my God, I have to know what happens. But the longer I sat with it, the more I was like, this is really just Throne of Glass in a different culture. And I kind of docked points for like lack of originality. Also, there's one trope that we've read actually, and I think a few fantasy novels now, that I want to talk about later because it really bothers me. But I did really like the book, so I definitely want to read the next one.
Yeah, I don't know when the next one's coming out, because on Goodreads it's not listed. So I guess it's TBD on when that one comes out.
Also, though, debut author, leave them alone, let them write in peace. Not everyone is SJM and Rebecca Yarros.
Oh, yeah, no, that's not a criticism. That was just more.
This book came out last year. Hold on.
Though, I will say, for such a long book, the world building was a little clumsy at times. I was like, girl, you have to explain some of these words. I don't know what they mean.
Yes. It's a large world for one book.
Yeah, but I loved the world when I understood it.
Well, speaking of the world and the story, is it overall more plot or character driven?
I do think there's a lot of character development of the main character, but I do still feel like it's a plot driven book. Like, she is along for the ride and would not make half of the choices that she ends up making if she had many choices.
Yeah, she's kind of forced into her situation, so there's no way of getting out of it. But yeah, I was kind of struggling thinking about that, because it is very character development heavy and it's very world heavy. So that's kind of just, it's a setup book for the rest of the series, because you need to learn a lot in order to really dive into the plot.
I agree on the plot thing. She's doing her best to avoid the plot, but it finds her anyway. And yeah, any book that's kind of trials based is going to be heavily plot driven. So
she just wants to be a chemist's apprentice and take frogs.
Mm-hmm. She's trying to be a doctor, village witch or whatever. And then, right.
So know. Relatable. Don't we all just want to be a simple village witch?
fate finds a way, though.
Yeah, it does. Okay, well, this was the debut novel of this author. Would you read other books by her?
I mean, I think we'll probably all pick up the second, is what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. So, yes, if for the pure fact that, like, A, there's a cliffhanger, B, fantasy in a Middle Eastern setting is not common. And it was kind of nice to read something a little bit different, even if I can't pronounce any of the words.
Yes. Sorry for my butchering of that summary, because there's a lot of words that I could not say. But yeah, I agree. I would read this series, the Scorch Trial series, and any other books really I'd be curious about by the author.
Yes, I enjoyed this book. I think one of the reasons it's so trope heavy is because it's a debut novel. Even SJM's first Throne of Glass books are very tropey. So I think as this author writes more, I'd be really curious and like feel very interested in like where she ends up going with her storytelling. Because I do feel like tropes are sort of often a crutch for new authors that they end up outgrowing. So hopeful for that.
What about the pacing of the book and how long it took to get through it?
I think it took me 5 days to read this book, and I saw a lot of reviews complaining about the pacing. This is possibly an unpopular opinion. I did not have a problem with the pacing. No. But I found the characters interesting, and I found every part of the book intriguing in some way. So, like, even the portions that weren't super action-packed, I felt interested in what was going on. But I can understand why people would maybe want there to be more consistent action.
I agree. Reading some of the reviews, I was like, was I not reading the same book? Like, maybe we just saw, like, the politics of it a little more and can sit through the heavy world building, even if it was a little clumsy. Like, I also found the whole thing interesting. This took me almost a week to read, but like very doable. I didn't think it was too long or too poorly paced at any part, really. There were a couple that were just like a bit slower, and it was building up to definitely the action towards the end, but a good world building book setting up a whole series will do that.
Yeah. It took me 3 days to read, according to Goodreads. And I also agree, I didn't find the pacing that slow or stuff like that. I mean, it does look like once I hit like the 200 page mark, it took me a minute to get past that. When I mean a minute, I mean a day. So I do remember a specific part where I was like, okay, they're really just character building her, and they haven't gotten to a certain section of the book that I was waiting for the action. But I was fine with it because, I, like y'all said, I love politics. I was fascinated by how this country and separate countries run, but also don't run. Like,
I was just also never uninterested in Sylvia and like what was cooking in her head.
Yeah, she's complex.
Big yes on that. Also, just a warning, because it is a trials book, but you don't get to the trials until literally like 50% of your way through. So it's not entirely a trial book. I feel like you should probably know that going in.
That's what I was talking about, is I got to like the 200 page mark and we still hadn't gotten to a trial yet. And I'm like, huh, interesting.
It's building up to it. Okay.
But it was time well spent, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Would you watch a movie or TV show about the book?
Yeah, I think this would be a good TV show.
To me, I'm like neither yes or no. Like, if they created it, I'd watch it. But I don't think it's unique enough that I would be really clamoring to watch something about it. Like, I feel like if you've watched other fantasy shows, that's like kind of what this is like. So, yeah, I enjoyed the world, but meh.
I'm kind of the same way. Like, it is more of the same of what's popular in fantasy right now. Yes, it's a different spin, but I much prefer the spin in the form of the book, because you get more of the character's thought and things and a lot more of the details, where a lot of those are omitted in cinema. So I'm like indifferent. Like, if it became something, then yeah, I'd see what it turned out as, but I'm not like, oh my God, they need to make this into a movie right now.
Yeah, I'm not clamoring for it. But at the same time, I see so many of the like book talk books being optioned for film and movies that I'm like, maybe not. Maybe put this one before all the other ones.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I think we're already to our spoiler section. That was quick.
As you go,
oh,
ready.
Sorry. Oh.
Whoa, Katie.
Wow, that was fun. It's usually me that passes over it.
Oh, damn. Well, what's y'all's busy girl ratings?
I think a 4. I think I'm going to stick with my quality rating. I do agree. It's long. It's a long book. It's like 500 pages, but we told Casey, because she was the only one who hadn't read it prior to this episode recording, that it's surprisingly quick to read.
Yeah. I'm going to also match that and match quality rating of 4. I blew through this on Kindle. I would have never told you it was over 500 pages. Didn't feel like it. Contrary to what other reviews said, I think it's worth the read if you like this kind of fantasy. And it's a little bit of a fresh spin on, you know, what's kind of everybody's favorite storyline. So.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. This is one of those rare episodes where we're all going to agree all the time. That's crazy. I'm going to stick with a 4. I think it's worth picking up, even though it took me 5 days to read. I read most of it in 2 days and I was really interested. I don't think it felt that long. High points for interesting political system.
I think before we get into our spoiler alert section, it just kind of reminded me of something. The reason why it's easy for us to read a political system like this is because we already have the fantasy tropes in our heads and we've read so much fantasy that world building is a lot easier for us to digest and read than probably some other listeners.
If you're a fantasy junkie, you have no excuse.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, spoiler alert section. We are at the spoiler alert. Decide if you want to read this book and come join us later if you do. Okay, I'm just going to start out with that trope that I mentioned because it's like really nagging in my brain. The colonizer romance. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't fucking get it.
It's awkward.
It's awkward. And I'm sorry, there is no amount of amazing writing you can do that would make me believe that two people who have been a part of kingdoms who have where one of them has literally tried to wipe the other off the face of the earth, has demonized their ethnicity and oppressed them, can so easily just fall in love. I'm like, and I think it's a little bit icky. And we've read it in multiple books now. And I think it's like, if to be done well, it needs to be written so much more complicated than it's currently being written as. And I just was not won over with that.
It's very wishful thinking to think love can convert someone to your side.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think the most recent one we read that was the same was the Hurricane Wars. Mm-hmm. Like,
yes. And it bothered me in that book too.
Like in the moment, you're like, ooh, steamy. And then later on, you're like, ooh, that was kind of icky.
I will say, I think this book did a better job than Hurricane Wars in some instances. Not necessarily like the dynamics of like the actual relationship, setting aside colonizing. I think Hurricane Wars did a better job at that. This one, I think, because of how it laid out the ending, is setting up a more complicated romance.
I agree.
If a romance at all.
Seems to have saved it, but
yes. So that's the only reason why this book wasn't like throw it in the garbage for me is because she left it very open-ended as to what's going to happen between them. And I'm very interested to see where they go with it. And I hope she goes into a place that I would like.
But they really might just Serpent in the Wings of Night us.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say, because I felt like Serpent in the Wings of Night is the only book I've read that did a version of this well. Because in the first book, the fact that Aurea is human is like a never-ending source of grief, even for her dad, who loves her. And then them being on opposing sides of this like vampire war or whatever is never resolved. Like it tears them apart. The second book was a huge fucking letdown for the same reason colonizer romances are, because it's like, how could, there are some things that are not forgivable. There are barriers that one cannot face.
Yes. Thank you. And let the girl burn it down for once.
Yes. Not everything has to end happily ever after. And you don't have to apologize to a man who excused the murder of your people just because he's not like a huge apologist. Like they try to be like, oh my God, no, he's not his dad. Like he knows that those things were wrong. And it's like, okay, he's going to support the same system though, isn't he? He spent his whole life hunting Jasadis, did he not?
Yeah, it didn't seem like he did apologize. It seemed like he said, I grew up with different truths, which I think is an interesting take, because normally they just like are like, oh, I see you. I see your truth now. And now my eyes are open. This one seemed to say. Hurricane Wars
also did that.
Yes.
And I was no.
I'll be interested to see.
Yeah, I'm hoping, because Hurricane Wars did not end off with quite the cliffhanger that this one did.
Yes, and there's no forced marriage whatever thing.
Yes, happens. So this one, I think, I thought it was more morally gray than other colonizer romances that we've read.
Granted, I do think the morally gray aspect of the colonizer romance thing is furthered into that morally gray realm because Sylvia is just so apathetic toward taking back her kingdom and caring. Like she's just kind of like, I'm trying to make a new life, whatever. Like I don't like them, but it is what it is. So I think that adds some, like both main characters are very morally gray in where they stand on this, which adds some complexity to the situation, I think.
Yeah,
it does. And that's something I really liked about the book, is I would actually personally argue that Sylvia is very morally gray. Which
yeah, she does not come off as like a hero, a good guy.
No, she's really not a hero, but no. I actually really enjoyed that. Like it was probably the part of the book that I found most unique. And Throne of Glass does it too, but I really felt like this author leaned into it in a way that it was not in Throne of Glass.
Yeah, because in Throne of Glass, she quickly hops on the train and goes along with it. I felt like Sylvia the entire time was forced into her situation, and she kept saying like, my people are not my people. It's just me surviving out here, and they can
she's
do
like,
what
I
they
was
need
like
to.
Eight or whatever. I don't give a shit what happens.
And I also,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, it's actually fascinating because what really makes Sylvia realize that she does give a shit about her kingdom is kind of her romance with the heir. And I think that is really fascinating because the points where they conflict morally and like forces her to stand up for Jasadis. And that's kind of how she realizes that she does care and like ultimately results in her claiming her power. Even though she emphatically does not want to up until like literally the last 10 pages of the book.
Yeah. So that's kind of what the first question we have neglected to actually address is in a world where being a Jasadi is a death sentence and Sylvia's people are dying and she's at risk of being found and dying, what did you think of her and her choices? And what did you think about her little repressed magic situation?
I liked it because she was very disempowered and really had no access to her people or her culture. And I think attached some of her ideas about her culture to a woman who was essentially her abuser after Jasad fell. And so I think that's also part of why she rejected her culture so harshly, which I felt was like very understandable. The part where I feel like she really is cemented as a morally gray person and is like really taken out of the hero realm is when she learns that there is this Jasad resistance and she does not seek to join it. Like that is the point where I really like felt like, oh, so Sylvia is really like, I mean, she's really not a hero, because most heroes, that's the point where they would be like, oh, okay. Like, I had no idea there was this organized effort. Like, I want to join that and fight for my people. She was still like, don't look at me.
Yeah. She didn't feel like she could take up the mantle, but also like she didn't want to, even during the trials, because if you win, you win like riches and gold and you're set up for life. She was fine with that. She was just like, I'll take it. Cool. Like, yeah, she wasn't going to do anything with it.
She definitely gives some Katniss vibes.
Yeah.
The like not caring. Similarly, the thing that finally lands her in trouble is she cares about no one ever, even her besties. She's like, you get what you get, you know, whatever you get, it's your choice, until the little orphan girl is in the way of the kingdom and she cannot bear it. The one person she can stand down for. And that's how she ends up in her whole pile of mess.
Well, and it's funny because the person who injures the little orphan girl is her cousin, who she fucking hates. So like there's two sides to it where she's like, I want to help the little orphan girl, but also like fuck my cousin. So like that's why I kind of want to do it too.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
That's the only moment where it's not entirely self-preservation for her.
Yes.
Yes. That is very true. So what about the magic system and the world building? There are a lot of different kingdoms who have all kind of been united under Nizal. Again, not exactly sure where we stand on pronouncing that word. And so they all have sort of an uneasy peace with each other. What did you think of them and their different rulers?
I liked the political intrigue of the different rulers and how they each wanted to use Sylvia for a different purpose. Mm-hmm. What I'm most interested in is it really seems like some of these like sleeping founders, these magical beings, are going to come back into play later in the series. And they give me like Titan vibes. I'm like, what is going to happen? What is her link? You know? I don't know. The magic system is sort of irrelevant other than magic people are being hunted for most of this book. I think it will come far more into play next book. And if any of these sleeping ruler people do wake. But yeah, in this book, it's entirely politics based and these rulers using her as a pawn. And I mean, I thought that was really interesting, especially the lady ruler. She was so two-faced. And I was like, ooh. This is great.
Yeah, I loved the Sultana and how like they thought maybe they could trust her, but then it turns out she's been using some nefarious. She's
the worst of all of them.
Yeah. Yep. And so it was very interesting seeing present day of the countries and how they interact in this tournament and how like their champions give them glory, but also the tournament is based on the mythology of these rulers and locking away the Jasadi ruler in this cavern and how they came together. And so there's always been this kind of like hatred towards Jasad, but they let them be. And like, it's very interesting because Sylvia talks about how that's not what she learned in the mythology. So it's trying to get it straight and trying to figure out what is truly what happened. And I'm really hoping, I don't know if we go back in time or if, because it made it seem like these rulers and these founders were immortal or some form of immortality.
Yeah, I definitely understood that maybe they were sleeping or something.
Yeah. So I think it will be interesting to like learn about the lore of the past and figuring out what really happened. And, but I think the most interesting part of the book was the political intrigue of the present day. And then learning about what really happened at Jasad those like decade ago. And it may not, they were also a morally gray country, if not really not like good.
Yeah, kind of evil, actually.
Yeah, evil, yeah.
But also basing the hatred of a people in the genocide on their A, founder, or B, current rulers.
Yeah. Who they were also trying to overthrow.
Yes.
Right. It's like, it's really icky stuff to wade into.
Yeah.
It is.
It's not like we wiped Germany off the map because of Adolf Hitler, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's icky. It's very it's not what morally wrong. You feel like should be done. So
there
so.
Was always a hatred, a baseline hatred. And then they found out that the rulers were doing some shady shit. So they allowed that as a reasoning to just decimate the entire population.
Which is complicated and messy and interesting, but leaves you feeling kind of like, ooh, like I want her to come back, but also like, ooh, they were kind of bad people too, but I don't want them to die, but you know.
Well, then it makes the two different rebel groups who stand for two different things. Yeah. It makes them really intriguing of like, who is she going to go with? Is she going to be fighting within her own country in order to take over? Like, it's going to be very interesting.
Yes. So many things in there that you guys mentioned that I really loved. I love what I think is sort of a new thing we're seeing in fantasy, where like the hero's legacy is flawed. So like the country they come from is questionable. And this is something else that is in Hurricane Wars, where like this girl is fighting for a country that really treated her very badly and had like really gross inequality and like poor treatment of their own citizens. And so I really love that sort of moral conflict of like being a hero fighting for a cause that is, you know, really kind of flawed from the start, and like their belief in like trying to make something better, I think is really interesting. Because also obviously what happens to Jasaad was super unethical and terrible, and the continued hunt of Jasaadis is like, how do you even excuse that when they've been totally disenfranchised from their power?
And then you add in complicated things like her two friends who end up being political refugees, even though they were people of power within the regime.
Because I also loved seeing the leaders of all the different kingdoms and how they chose to like organize their kingdoms differently, and how the other kingdoms were all proud of something else, like Orban or Omal, I forget which one it was like super conservative and frugal, and they really valued simplicity. And then the female empress,
Sultana,
there we go, how they were like known as like very hedonistic and living in the moment, and they were beautiful and like wealthy, but like actually her kingdom really prided itself on equality. And that was like, it was just so interesting to watch them interact and how they led their own kingdoms and negotiated with each other. Like, that was my favorite part of Aaron, was how watching him navigate politics and seeing Sylvia learn from him and get better at it herself.
Yeah.
And I like the underlying message that both this and Hurricane Wars has, is that no system of governments is perfect, and you only know the side that you were raised in. You know, like there's this underlying message of when you go to war, which side is right? Well, probably neither.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you even see it in the resistance groups. Like there's one that has like seemingly much stronger ethos of like peace and like only using violence as necessary. And then there's this other like much more extremist group that kills its own if they won't join. And like, that also felt very Hunger Games to me in a way I liked, where District 13 is like also kind of a villain ultimately. And so I liked how complicated everything it was. And I think it actually helps you forgive Sylvia a little bit, because you can see why none of them are teams she necessarily wants to fight for. Like, they all have their own deep flaws.
Well,
she's like, I'm 20 and I'm tired. I just want to exist.
Yeah, she grew up essentially in a palace, but she saw her mother be locked away and was raised by her grandparents, who she loves, but also is starting to recognize that they were pretty terrible people, and they're the ones who locked her mother away. So that's also kind of like, she already knew underlying like tensions there. And then they forced these cuffs on her to quote unquote save her, but did they really mean for that? And to keep her from her magic exploding out. And then she's in the woods with this lady who is supposedly helping her, but it turns out it's just abusing her and is treating her awfully. And she escapes that by killing her. And then she, at that point, she's a teenager and teenagers rebel and they don't really want to be part of like any sort of system. I think teenagers are like the epitome of anarchy. They're just anarchist at heart. And so she's just kind of wanting to do her thing, survive, and she doesn't want to give a shit. She's selfish, which is pretty teenage-esque. And when she gets caught, she's just trying to survive. Like, it's just, it, even though it's a fantasy book, it has themes of real life. And it's believable, even if it's just this fantasy world. Like, this is how political intrigue happens. This is how countries are formed. This is how trade deals happen and games and tournaments. And, like, it was just very interesting because everyone was morally gray. There was no true hero at all in this book.
And that brings me to something that I actually didn't like at all about this book, because I really, really wanted more of it. And it's once Sylvia realizes she has heavily compartmentalized her memories of growing up, I really wanted those to flood forth in some sort of meaningful way. Because we get kind of a tease of the knowledge that, like, she was sort of like an evil tyrant growing up. But then we never really learn more about it. And it felt sort of breadcrumbed in a way that was annoying. Because, like, when she, like, has this force of magic and, like, claims herself as the heir, I really wanted that to, like, come with, like, the memories she was starting to remember and, like, all of this stuff. So I'm really hoping more of that is in book two, because I feel like they sort of fully explain the implications of, like, her grandmother's and grandfather's ruling system, but they sort of, like, imply that, like, her childhood was, like, sort of not as happy as we might assume, but then don't actually, like, give us the whole thing.
I agree yet disagree. Like, I want to know those things, but also I don't think, like, her mental health needs to be magically healed when she gets her magic powers back. I'm okay that it might take us time to get there. Flooding forth, you know, I don't know. I'm okay if she never recovers them. Like, that's a journey, a mental health journey.
No, I disagree with that.
Okay with that.
We need to know. Well, because
someone else will tell her what was up and she'll learn things.
She meets her former servants and her former people who helped her. And they basically,
when the poor guy died, that was so sad.
Yes. And they loved
her. That made me cry.
Yeah, that made me cry. And they loved her, but at the same time, they were like, you were
afraid of her.
Yeah, you were scary. And you were very privileged and pampered, and you grew up to be a carbon copy of your grandparents who were tyrants.
And part of my problem is I feel like the memory would come back, but then she wouldn't have much of a reaction to it, or she wouldn't be able to, like, contextualize it in her mind. And I feel like the things she remembered should have been, like, bigger moments in the book than they were. Like, they should have hit harder. Like, when she finds out that she really did burn that guy's blanket, and then she has sort of this basis of being like, maybe all these other things are true. I don't know. I just felt it could have landed better.
Maybe it will expand upon it in the next books, now that she has this memories.
I'm hoping. Okay. Well, that brings us to Aaron, the heir. And
the white boy.
The white boy. Oh my God. I saw a review that was like, why is the hero in this book a white boy? And I was kind of like, I kind of agree with you.
He's a colonizer. He's not.
Yeah, of course he's not a hero. I would say that.
No, he's not a hero at all. Anyway, that aside, he catches Sylvia and forces her to be his champion. What did you think of Aaron? What about his ability to find magic?
I think it was interesting learning that a Jasadi came in to and infiltrated and may or may not have given him magic.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions about that part still. Also,
I do too.
What are the odds he's tailor-made to find this girl?
Yeah, that one's a little too convenient.
Okay, so that's the part that kind of bothered me about the magic system not being, like, actually explained more. Because we know magic exists, but, like, its bounds, its limits, how it actually works and manifests for individual people is, like, very much not explained. And that made the fact that he can sense magic feel a little cheap to me, because it felt like just a convenient loophole. And I was like, oh, wow, how crazy. Someone tries to curse him and ends up giving him magical powers. How does that happen?
He develops a weird glove fetish.
And his hair turns blonde, and now he can sense things. Like,
yeah, it's very convenient. I give it grace because we don't know much about the magic system, because they're actively trying to suppress it. They're trying to suppress knowledge. They're trying to kill off all the magical people. So I'm hoping now that she's out of that oppressive space where she can truly be in tune and in touch with her magic. Cause she was 8. She wasn't training. And so I'm hoping if she goes to Jasad and learns more about magic, because I think the narrator doesn't know much about magic, and the kingdom that she was in was actively suppressing magic. So of course they're not going to want to tell anyone about it.
Right. Well, that's the thing though, is like, I understand the storytelling tool here is these people are persecuting magic when they know nothing about it. And you also know nothing about it as the reader. However, their leader guy has some form of magic and is not persecuted.
Yes. Like, I thought it was so crazy. I was like, is it not a bigger deal that this man is doing magic? Like, and it seems like they imply sort of a little bit that his dad has like some kind of magic, like his scepter has some sort of power. And I'm just like, because I do think it's a cop out when the way magic works is not fully explained, and then it can all of a sudden conveniently do whatever the author wants. And it really bothers me. And that it was something that really bothered me in Crescent City 3. And it is something that really bothers me here, because I'm like, if you can give someone the gift to sense magic, you have to explain that and not just be like, oh, I don't know, magic is so crazy.
But to the root of the question, I did enjoy Aaron in general.
Yes, I did. And
what a foil they were to each other, but so mm-hmm. perfectly that there was like definitely some off-page sexual attention.
Mm-hmm.
This was not a spicy book. No. But the whole time you're like, ooh, the tension. Ooh, I want it to be spicy.
The tension was so good.
Maybe the tension was tensioning. But the enemies to lovers is alive and well in this book. Mm-hmm. And maybe back to enemies. Who knows?
Yes. That's what I was going to say, is I love... People say they love a romance. I love a heartbreak. I'm like, yeah. I want that enemies to lovers to enemies. But I have realized that I'm really a sucker for the grumpy-grumpy dynamic. I love a grumpy grumpy.
Like, I love a grumpy grumpy.
Mm-hmm. When they're the only two people that like really like get each other and like bring out that more playful side in each other. Oh my God, I'm such a fucking sucker.
They like begrudgingly realize that they have found curmudgeonly love.
Yeah.
Well, what did he call her? He called her like a psychotic goose or something.
Yes.
Yeah, that was so
nickname
funny.
For her is the name of a demon that lures people to their deaths. Yeah. Like
hilarious.
No, it's so good. I think Aaron is a perfect foil, maybe too perfect. I didn't like his magic because it's not explained well. And also it's way too perfect to find her, because like no one else could find out she's magical because she's suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's crazy to me that like he can, because he touches her. And then that's like that whole thing. But I like him as a personality and a foil to her, so that like he explains what his truth is and she explains what her truth is.
He's like if Selena had really fallen for Dorian. Like that's the vibe I get, but better done. Like I don't know.
I think that it's also if Selena had fallen for Rowan, because they're the grumpy grumpy.
Like, right, but the whole like I have conquered you and taken you to be my slave in this trial thing. That's definitely Dorian.
Oh, absolutely.
That is Dorian. Yep.
The SJM knew that colonizer romances do not work, and that's why Selena could not be with Dorian. Period.
Period. I'm hoping. I'm giving this book so much grace because we don't know the future, and how they ended it off with, like, he said, like, we're preparing for war. I'm really hoping that it doesn't end in romance, or if it does end in romance, it doesn't do like the cop out things other fantasy authors do.
There's like a couple Ashes of these the books right now that are on cliffhangers by fantasy authors that I'm like, do the hard thing, make them bad.
Yes, yeah. Yes, do the hard thing.
A couple of them, do the hard thing.
Kill them.
Macayaros, do the hard thing.
Yeah, kill a fucking character.
Yeah.
Okay. Hard agree. So what about the Alcala? Alcala? Don't know how to say it.
I was saying Alcala.
I was too, but I don't know Alcala. If it's right.
Alcala? Yeah.
It's the trials part of the book.
Yeah. Took forever.
How did you feel about
there.
The trials?
It's the colonizer party.
Yeah.
I liked, because in trials books, we normally get stuck in a place for very extended periods of time. This one traveled. Each trial was in a different country.
It so built the world.
It yes. built the world. And that is a perfect way to world build. Because yes. I find lately in books and in series, the first book always seems to stick in one or two locations. Mm-hmm. This one did not fall into that trap. And I think that was the perfect way to world build and get you into each of the countries.
Well, it lets the main character see what's out there, what she's up against, or what she maybe wants to continue hiding from. Like, she gets this 360 degree view before she has to make any decision, which is really nice. Also, it incorporates a little bit of magic and remnants of magic, and it mirrors the folklore. And I don't know, I just thought the whole premise was interesting and more unique than some of the other stuff we're seeing.
I agree. I loved that they traveled. I loved how it opened up the world. I also kind of liked that it wasn't necessarily a fight to the death. I felt that like that was actually like a little refreshing. It made things just a little bit less cutthroat, even though you understood that like people could still die. I felt like it made it more understandable why this whole country was willing to like take part in it and celebrate it. And also why the victors were able to sort of like be friends and like meet each other without being complete enemies, which I actually thought was really nice. Like, I really liked her interaction with the other victors. I do wish some of the trials were a little more difficult. I was like, well, that felt too easy. But overall, I really liked them.
I like that they're based in lore too. Like, the reasoning mm-hmm. behind the trials was like, here is this founder's trial, here is that founder's trial. And it's like how they locked away the Jesadi prince or king. So I thought that was very interesting. And yeah, I agree. Like, it's really refreshing because, I mean, they can kill each other in the trials. That mm-hmm. is allowed. And it is a very deadly trial. So people do die of natural causes. And she does end up killing one of them. But yeah, I think that's interesting that she can form a connection and bond with the other victors without having to worry to kill them.
Well, and it gave a little bit more of the political dynamic too, because some of them were raised growing up to be this champion and others were like prisoners, been told like, if you do well, you can be free, you know, like. It was interesting how each one was chosen mm-hmm. and then how they kind of allied themselves amongst themselves.
Okay, so eventually Aaron and Sylvia start to develop a connection. This book is very much tension related. What did you think of their relationship?
I enjoyed that he kept having to rescue her from like ravines and things. I was like, yeah, make him work.
I think the author did a good job of making it not too easy. Like, I hate to keep comparing this book to Hurricane Wars, but I'm going to do it because I do feel like there's a lot of similar tropes and these are similar characters. I felt in Hurricane Wars, the romance happened too easy. I do like that there was a lot of fighting and back and forth in our journey to the romance here. And I really liked how they sort of pushed each other. Like we said, I love a grumpy. And I really liked the cliffhanger because, again, like we said, I'm not down with like colonizer apologizing romances.
Do the hard thing.
Do the hard thing.
Enemies.
Yeah. I will say I did see some reviews of people saying like this is a YA book disguised as adult because they were expecting like actual romance and chemistry. I'm going to disagree with that because I do not think that this world building is a YA world building. Mm-hmm. I would not recommend this for like young adults. Like, I think you need to be a pretty high level reader in order to really enjoy. I'm not saying like high schoolers can't read this.
You need to have voted in a presidential election at some point.
Yeah.
You need to have a government background.
I don't think you can appreciate this world without like understanding how morally gray the real world is. Like, this book would have been so over my head as a kid. Not because it's hard to read, but because I just don't think I would have really appreciated how realistic the built politics and like built kingdoms are in this world.
Well, and to reference Hunger Games again, reading it as an adult, the politics hit way more differently.
Yeah. And you just pick up totally different things. Also, I don't think you have to have the smuttiest, smut-filled first novel to be adult, especially if you're doing enemies to lovers, because again, huge gripe...
adult doesn't have to mean smut.
Yeah, adult does not equal smut. But also, one of my huge gripes with other books is that they're doing enemies to lovers way too quick.
Yeah.
If these people are enemies, it takes at least one book to get to lovers. Like, please, you cannot be having all of this smut in book one if they're going to start off as enemies.
Especially if they didn't love Feyre book one. Come on.
Yeah. Especially if they're coming from completely different backgrounds, especially a colonizer background, and they actively hate each other in the beginning. Yes. Like, yeah. Enemies to lovers, where it's like one of them actually loves the other one, where it's like they met and they fell in love, but like they are hateful towards each other. That's different than this. This is true enemies. Like, they are actively hating each other and have completely different viewpoints on where they stand. So like, no, they should not have become lovers by the end of this book. And they didn't. So I'm very thankful for that.
Me too. Okay, so this book ends on a cliffhanger where Sylvia reveals who she is. She has this outburst of magic and it's beautiful and powerful. And we're like, oh my God, Sylvia. And then she disappears. And Aaron is like planning for war and trying to recapture her. What did you guys think of that ending?
I cannot wait for the tension between the two as they try and sort through their feelings, but also like
kill each other.
Go to war.
I hope they truly go to war. I want them to go to actual war, not like they meet up in a battlefield in truce. They need to
do what Carissa Broadbent couldn't. Okay.
Yeah. Do what Carissa Broadbent didn't have the guts to do.
Also, we always shit on the second book of hers. We liked the book. It just didn't go the way we wanted it to and was disappointing in that aspect.
We wanted for that main character to actually actively go against her husband.
Unpopular opinion, I want it for Zayden and Violet too.
Yes.
I do too.
Unpopular opinion, agreed. I know we're all agreed on that point.
Yeah.
So I really liked the ending. I actually think I probably would have rated this book lower if not for the ending.
I think it's the only way it could end, except
yes. Yes, exactly. I'm excited for book two, and I hope this author has the goddamn guts.
Yeah, I hope for book two we explore myths and mythology and magic more. I think that
rip
needs
my
to be part of
heart
it.
Out and give me the magic.
Yes. I need to understand the world better in the past, and I need them to fight.
I do feel like a good portion, at least, of the like probably like the first half of the book is gonna have to be like her finding herself in her old kingdom.
Yeah,
and I'm here for it.
Because she's also,
those memories you're talking about can resurface.
Absolutely, because she's gonna be with a group of Jesatis for the first time since she's been a literal child, and she's finally gonna have an opportunity to be like, "What the hell was going on?" I think it's going to be good.
Ask the questions.
Mm-hmm. Reveal the truths.
Because, like, her people committed a genocide and were, like, farming magic. Like,
that
need
minor,
to discuss that.
That minor thing.
Yeah,
it was like dropped at the end.
Yeah, like, essentially her grandparents were...
I'm not even mad that it was dropped at the end, though, because that leaves her things to explore and work through in the next book.
Well, because I want to see what happens with the rebel groups and if they know about that kind of stuff and if they're wanting to continue that, or do they even want a king and queen? Do they even want an emperor?
Right. And I assume we're going to finally find out the real motivations of that, like, violent rebel group, because as Sylvia notes, they're really made up of, like, the ruling families. So she's like, you guys were taking part in all the stuff that, like, my grandparents were taking part of. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting questions to explore in book two.
Okay, well, do you have any book recommendations?
Yeah, I'm going to recommend my bestie, my best book ever, my favorite book of, like, all time, The Crown of Nyaxia, book one. Don't read book two. Like we said 1,000 times, I'm not ready to talk about it. Okay. Broke my heart. But the first one broke my heart in a good way. And it's a very political, trials based, lovers facing insurmountable odds. And yeah.
I'm going to say, for a more watered down version, that's not as good as this book, but I think it is a better jumping off point if you want to get into fantasy and then read this book, is The Trial of the Sun Queen. I think that series is going in a cool direction. I like it. And it's a trial-based book with not a colonizer romance. So we love to see that. Well,
they tried. Yeah, don't spoil book one.
I'm going to go hard left out of fantasy and go to a historical fiction that is also new on the scene and has, I've seen it pop up on some social media a bit. It is What the River Knows by Isabel Ibáñez. Mm-hmm. And it takes place in Egypt, definitely talks about colonizers, but it's historical fiction, you know, a mystery on the Nile kind of thing. Has a cliffhanger that has me similarly enraged at the end and waiting for book two. So yeah, similar vibes. The premise of this one, though, she's the main character is an Argentinian girl who ends up in Egypt and sees the colonizer aspect of, like, the degradation of Egyptian history from a, like, third point of view, which was really interesting.
Very interesting. That sounds actually super cool, and I'm definitely putting that on my TBR.
Yeah, that book has been on my list for a while.
Maybe just wait till the next one comes out, I think in, like, November, because the cliffhanger is, it keeps me up at night.
I will say, I need our listeners to submit book recommendations with Egyptian mythology and history incorporated into the books, because I feel like we don't get enough of that. And I'm so fascinated by Egyptian history. Like, I think they have such a fascinating story. Like, you know, oh my God, why am I blanking on the Library of Alexandria book? What is it called? Where it's like the British, the magicians kind of thing.
Atlas Six?
That's it. Atlas Six. I was wanting.
Sorry, your description of that book is giving me.
I was thinking about a very specific portion of the book where I was wanting it to go with the Library of Alexandria. I wanted more Egyptian history in that.
Well, girl, do I have news for you? The second book and the one I just recommended is going to be called Where the Library Hides.
Okay, but I need more Egyptian mythology.
I'm saying that book is going to probably give you exactly what you're asking for.
Yes, I think it will. But I need our readers to, or listeners to, come up with more of them.
All right, anyway. That's our discussion. Please read and please rate and review the podcast. These are just our opinions. We want to hear from y'all. This is what makes books fun. So please join in the conversation at Busy Girls Pod. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.